This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, April 13th, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum opens at 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org.
The AMP, Arkansas Music Pavilion, presents Big Gigantic with guest Paper Diamond Saturday, April 21st at the Washington County Fairgrounds. This evening will offer a mix of electronic, jazz, and hip-hop music. Tickets and more information are available at arkansasmusicpavilion.com.
Later on the program, standing on your head, lifting another person in the air, and flipping about takes practice, especially if you're doing all of those stunts on a moving horse. We'll meet members of a vaulting team in town as part of the annual Horse Festival at the University of Arkansas's Pauline Whitaker Animal Science Arena, and a conversation with the Cherokee Nation's Principal Chief, Bill John Baker. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich traveled to Tahlequah this week to meet him.
Before all of that, a check of other items worth your attention. Arkansas's two racetracks that also offer electronic gambling are raking in record millions. What the gambling industry calls electronic games of skill at Oaklawn Park and Hot Springs brought in over $90 million in wagers for March. That breaks all previous records for the park. Roby Brock with Talk Business says Southland Park in West Memphis saw similar gains, with March's totals up 73% from previous years.
I think that there is definitely a sign when we see these numbers growing in these electronic wagers that there is some recovery in consumer spending, at least with their discretionary income. People are looking for entertainment outlets, and if your entertainment outlet gives you the promise of maybe winning a little something extra, that can stimulate some people to do that.
He says the increase in betting is in part due to the gaming and racing park's aggressive marketing. Roby says the casino's electronic gambling is on pace to exceed $2.8 billion taken in for calendar year 2012. He says the rise in gambling may attract potential competitors to the state.
Taxpayers have 48 extra hours to file this year. Since the traditional April 15th date falls on a Sunday and April 16th is a holiday, Emancipation Day, in Washington, D.C., the Internal Revenue Service estimates about 91,000 Arkansans will use still more time to file their taxes. David Snell, an IRS spokesman for Arkansas, says taxpayers can receive an automatic six-month extension by filing a Form 4868.
This allows extra time to get the return prepared and filed all the way until October 15th, but it's important to note it's only an extension of time to file, not to pay your tax.
Snell says all requested extensions filed by this year's April 17th deadline are accepted. He says taxpayers who think they will owe money but won't have their paperwork ready can follow a simple protocol.
The best thing to do is make an estimate of what your tax liability might be and send in some money with your Form 4868. But you don't have to send in 1 cent in order for Form 4868 to get you the extension. What will happen when you finally do file your tax return, if you wind up owing an additional amount, you will pay a late payment penalty of 0.5% per month on any unpaid balance, plus interest. What you avoid by filing Form 4868 on time is the big penalty. It's 5% per month, called a late filing penalty.
The six-month extension filing form can be found at the website irs.gov.
Nolan Richardson, C.C. Mercer, Roderick McDavis, and Marjorie Wilkins-Williams will receive Silas Hunt Legacy Awards from the University of Arkansas tonight at a banquet in Little Rock. The awards are given to African Americans with Arkansas connections in recognition of their significant achievements or contributions to the community, the state, and the nation. Nolan Richardson was the first African American head basketball coach in the Southeastern Conference. He won a national championship at Arkansas in 1994. Roderick McDavis is the former dean of the College of Education and Health Professions at the U of A and now president of Ohio University. Marjorie Wilkins-Williams was one of the first three undergraduate African American students admitted to the U of A and has had a storied career as a nurse and a nursing educator. And C.C. Mercer is one of the six pioneers, the first six African-American students to enroll at the University of Arkansas School of Law. He graduated from the law school in 1955.
The locally filmed television show Last Shot with Judge Gunn has been nominated for the PRISM Award. The honor is given annually by the Entertainment Industries Council for accurate television portrayals of prevention, treatment, and recovery from drug, alcohol, and tobacco use, and mental health concerns. The award will be handed out next week in Beverly Hills, California.
Officials with the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences say they hope to have demolition of Ray Winder Field completed sometime this summer. Leslie Taylor, Vice Chancellor for Communications at UAMS, says the university is having hazardous materials such as asbestos and lead paint removed from the old ball field, which was the longtime home of the Arkansas Travelers. Taylor says most of what's left of the ballpark is unusable, but UAMS has some plans for items that will be used to memorialize the park. Taylor says once the hazardous materials are removed, the school will begin bidding for a demolition contractor.
Speaking of baseball, the Arkansas Razorbacks and Kentucky Wildcats begin an important three-game SEC series tonight at Baum Stadium in Fayetteville. Arkansas is ranked as high as number 9 in the country, and Kentucky is ranked number 1 in the nation. Tonight's game is scheduled to begin at 6:35. Afternoon games for tomorrow and Sunday are scheduled to begin at 2:05 and 12:05, respectively.
And the Hawkeye Marathon is set for its annual run Sunday. Runners may have to deal with rain and strong winds. The National Weather Service says there is a 70% chance of showers or thunderstorms Sunday with wind gusts of up to 35 miles per hour. The Hawkeye is scheduled to begin Sunday morning at 7:30 on the Fayetteville Square. Those completing the entire 26.2-mile course will finish on the square as well.
Last summer into fall, we covered the Cherokee Nation's much-contested election for principal chief, which ended with tribal councilman Bill John Baker defeating incumbent Chief Chad Smith by a narrow margin, about 1,600 votes of the nearly 20,000 cast. He took office in early November. Ozarks at Largest Jacqueline Froelich traveled to the Cherokee Nation's headquarters in Tahlequah to talk with newly seated Chief Bill John Baker about his vision and political philosophy.
Trying to net newly elected principal chief Bill John Baker's political philosophies like trying to catch a sparkling trout swimming upstream. He aspires to only one political ideology.
You know, I'm Cherokee first. You know, I believe that the purpose of government is to help those that can't help themselves.
Off tape, the chief admitted to being a populist, one who supports the rights of a people historically diminished by privileged elites. Chief Bill John Baker, who is married with six children, fourth-generation Cherokee, born and raised in Cherokee County, great-grandson of Nancy Walker Osage, an early Tahlequah business owner and Cherokee healer. His roots trace further back to ancestors who walked the genocidal trail of tears. Despite surviving colonial pestilence and trying to assimilate into early American culture, 18,000 indigenous Cherokees were forced from ancestral lands east of the Mississippi in the 1830s, through Arkansas, then into Indian Territory, now present-day Oklahoma. An estimated 4,000 died due to disease and brutal conditions.
The Cherokees were one of the five civilized tribes. We're the only tribe with a written language. Unlike many of the other Native American tribes, when we were forced to remove from Georgia and Tennessee and from our eastern homelands, we were already business people, had taverns, had plantations. We were really quite advanced, and yet we were moved anyway.
In Oklahoma, after relocation, Cherokee families were given allotted parcels, which many lost to unscrupulous land agents. Still, they settled in, built new homes, businesses, and schools.
And really came into the golden age of the Cherokee. We built the first university west of the Mississippi for a female of any race. We built courthouses. We built our government back, and the United States, when they were doing the Declaration of Independence and setting up the U.S. government, they actually copied a great deal of our form of government.
Meaning as far back as the 1700s, Cherokees, then a confederacy of clans, used a democratic form of government modeled after the Iroquois, later adopted by the United States. By 1827, the Cherokee drafted one constitution asserting their sovereignty, which in part triggered forced federal relocation. Today, the tribe has rebounded to become the largest in the nation with 300,000 living across a 14-county jurisdiction in northeastern Oklahoma. It has no reservation, but does own nearly 66,000 acres of land, 58,000 in trust. So there's a lot at stake for this new chief, managing 8,500 employees and the operation of Cherokee Nation Businesses, LLC, which includes 8 casinos, as well as hospitality and environmental services, along with manufacturing, distribution, and telecommunications divisions.
Casinos, necessary evil. They create a lot of jobs. They do generate a lot of money. It's not going to be forever. So, you know, we are diversifying our businesses and trying to bring in, you know, quality jobs in government contracts, in engineering, in security, and we're taking, you know, the things that we use in the casinos and we're marketing those things in other areas and creating wealth and income streams outside of casinos. We're still going to take care of the cash cow. Don't be misled.
As a result, unemployment is low here, 6.2%, compared to the national average of 8.2%. Chief Baker did say underemployment or low-wage jobs are a problem, so he's pushing higher education.
Right now, there's not a student in the 14 counties that wants to go to college that if they apply and get admitted, we're giving each one of them $2,000 a semester. Doesn't matter where they want to go to college, which, you know, I'm quite proud of.
And while the Congressional Budget Office reports a federal deficit of $780 billion in the first half of fiscal 2012, Cherokee Nation's operating in the black with $244 million in net assets.
You know, the Cherokee Nation, you know, we are in relatively good shape. We do everything that the federal government does except raise an army, and that might be why we're solvent. But, you know, our assets are really our people.
Cherokee Nation is sovereign and negotiates with the U.S. government via the Department of Interior Bureau of Indian Affairs. It holds trust responsibility towards 556 federally recognized tribes, conveying annual funding for housing, health care, and human services, projected to be $2.5 billion next year for all tribes. And like other tribes, Cherokees grapple with poverty and disease, primarily diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity. To further offset health costs, Chief Baker sought to allocate more as soon as he took office.
The very first piece of legislation that I was able to sign was a piece of legislation that I'd brought forward as a councilperson to take 5% of the casino profits and put it directly into health care.
Chief Bill John Baker, during his 12 years on tribal council, served on every standing committee. His credentials include a degree in education from Northeastern State University, where he majored in political science. And for decades, he and his wife, Sherry, have operated a prosperous furniture company in Tahlequah. They have 6 children and 9 grandchildren. During his 12 years in office, former Principal Chief Chad Smith focused on 3 areas: jobs, language, community. His administration built a flourishing casino economy, as well as brokered industry and business deals, in 2010 bringing $87 million of revenue. But former Chief Smith also built a comprehensive elder care system and Cherokee language revitalization program. The nation operates an immersion charter school, the first of its kind in the state, and is also working with Apple to build smart devices that allow Cherokee language users to more easily process the very complex Cherokee syllabary, or alphabet. And on April 2nd, the tribe announced it would start building 300 new homes a year for tribal citizens.
I promised a housing program. We now have our display homes finished. We're taking applications now. They can go and physically look at the product that, you know, that they can get a three-bedroom brick home with a garage or a four- or five-bedroom brick home with a garage. We're building those in such a manner that it's creating a lot of jobs for our people. Impact aid is applied to the houses that we build through the Housing Authority, which really helps public education to the tune of about $2,600 for every child that lives in one of these houses that goes to public school.
During his campaign, Bill John Baker promised, if elected, to sell off a fancy corporate jet reportedly purchased by the nation in 2007 for $1.3 million to cut costs as well as any appearance of opulence.
It was just something that most Cherokees just thought that was a luxury item that the nation just didn't need. And, you know, when we couldn't take care of all of our health needs, our housing needs, our, you know, still had people on dirt floors and no running water, a turboprop was probably something that we really didn't need.
And another thing his administration does not need is controversy. Nearing last year's election, the tribe's Supreme Court upheld a 2007 tribal referendum revoking the citizenship of 2,800 Cherokee freedmen, barring them from services as well as from voting. Freedmen, so-called, are descendants of African Americans enslaved by Cherokees and allowed to enroll. But with threats by the Fed to withhold federal housing dollars to the tribe and a letter of warning from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the freedmen, after arbitration in federal district court between all parties, were reinstated and allowed to vote, which some believe pushed a hotly contested election in Bill John Baker's favor.
I can't imagine that that the freedmen voting had to be a plus. I needed every vote that I got, and I really can't imagine that many freedmen voted for the former administration.
Former Chief Chad Smith, along with 76% of Cherokees who supported purging the freedmen, said the vote to oust them was about the fundamental right of every government to determine its citizens, not about racial exclusion. Chief Baker, however, would not comment further because the tribe is pursuing a lawsuit in the Northern Federal District Court of Oklahoma in Tulsa to settle the long contentious matter. Before he lost his seat, former Chief Chad Smith had restarted talks with the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville to encourage cultural exchange, as well as collaborating on a sustainable agriculture and sustainable community development curricula.
And the truth is, you know, the Cherokees established their relationship with the University of Arkansas 150 years ago. And, I mean, right now today, any of our Cherokees that want to go to university in Fayetteville get in-state tuition because of that long-term relationship. You know, my mother's family were early settlers that actually settled in Arkansas, and it wasn't till later that they moved across the line into Delaware County, and that was part of why we have that relationship with Arkansas for in-state tuition for any Cherokees, is because a lot of our people moved out of there to make room for Arkansas.
And for their consummating relations, this summer, new principal Cherokee chief Bill John Baker and his entourage will travel to England to commemorate an ocean voyage taken 250 years ago by three other principal Cherokee chiefs to sign the first of many peace treaties. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more about the Cherokee Nation and its new principal chief, Bill John Baker, you can go to Cherokee.org. Live on stage in Northwest Arkansas presents singer-songwriter Jim Curry and his Take Me Home performance of John Denver's music Sunday afternoon at 2 in the Arend Art Center in Bentonville. Jim sings, in his own voice, the essence of John Denver's music and songs, including Rocky Mountain High, Annie's Song, and Take Me Home Country Roads. 855-9997 or live on stage, nwa.com, for tickets and more information.
Thank you.
It is Friday the 13th, April 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown. How are you?
Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Walking I'm still adjusting.
Did you walk under any ladders or cross the paths of any black cats today?
Okay, really, is there more bad luck that I could find?
Did you break a mirror?
No.
Are you a superstitious person?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm being very careful.
Well, okay. What do you got on tap today?
We're going to have Chinese food again.
All right.
Because we haven't for a while. One from Column Theater, one from Column Music, and one from Column Free or Almost Free Fun.
Of course, we're starting with theater.
Of course we are. And we're starting with The Fall of the House.
Which had a preview last night, but tonight is considered opening night.
Bob Ford's new mystery. You know, it premiered at the prestigious Alabama Shakespeare Festival and was nominated for the Mystery Writers of America's 2011 Edgar Award for Best New Play.
Yes, and he has since said that the play wasn't done yet, and he thinks it's close to done now.
It's changed since.
Yes.
The Alabama, okay.
And he says he's really proud of it. He doesn't want to say that out loud in front of anybody, but I just did. Kevin Christopher Fox is back, who directed Sundown Town. And the story is about a former slave who meets Edgar Allan Poe a few days before his death and a modern-day architect in court because of a fatal fire at a house she designed.
Right.
And how the two interact. 7:30 today, 2 and 7:30 Saturday, 2 and 7 Sunday at the Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $22. No Sex, Please, We're British.
Right.
The comedy opens tonight at Rogers Little Theater. It dates back to 1971, and it revolves around an assistant bank manager who lives above his bank with his new bride, and she orders some Scandinavian glassware.
Except
that what she gets is Scandinavian pornography.
And hilarity ensues.
It does. Showtime is 8 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday, and again next weekend. Tickets start at $10, $45 with food, and trust me,
It's a
lot of food.
It's a spread.
Other People's Money.
At Fort Smith.
Starts tonight at Fort Smith Little Theater. You know, it was a movie with Danny DeVito and a play first, which I didn't know.
I didn't either.
And it's about small town values versus big city greed. 8 o'clock today and tomorrow. And again, April 18th through 21st, 2:30 Sunday. Tickets are $10 at Fort Smith Little Theater. And Mary Poppins.
Coming to Walton Arts Center
already. On Tuesday. Case Dillard, who lived in Little Rock until he was 15, plays Bert in the touring production. You can find out more. It's, of course, 7 o'clock Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 8 o'clock on Friday, 2 and 8 on Saturday, 2 and 7 on Sunday the 22nd. Tickets start at $60 at 443-5600.
Okay.
That's Column A.
All right, Column Music.
Column Music, Big Smith.
Oh.
Breaking up
after
more than 15 years on the road, and they are at George's for happy hour today from 6 to 8, and the headliner Saturday at 9, $5 tonight or $10 for the headlining show.
There are going to be a lot of people there.
Oh, yeah. There's a bluegrass and country show at 6 o'clock Saturday at the Brentwood Community Building. It benefits West Fork Project Graduation.
Ah.
Tickets are $2 to $5, and you can call 601-6947. There's a new country music show in Tawnytown.
Is there?
Featuring the T-Town Sound Band. Can't believe I said that. 7 o'clock Saturday at Gifford's Auction. Not Giffel's Auditorium.
Right, that's what I thought you were saying.
Gifford's Auction in Tawnytown. Tickets are $2 to $8, 466-1172. Sona plays Saturday night at 7:30 at the Walton Arts Center.
The finale of the season.
Masterworks 3. Tickets start at $25 at 443-5600.
There's a conversation before that?
There is.
And Kyle, you might be there?
I better be. They've asked me to, and they're counting on me being there.
And he might show up.
He might show up.
Creative Conversation begins at 6:45 in Star Theater, 45 minutes before the concert.
On Sunday, a tribute to John Denver by a gentleman named Jim Curry, who has been called a doppelganger of John Denver. Yeah. It's called Take Me Home, and it happens at 2 o'clock Sunday at Aaron Arts Center in Bentonville. Tickets are $30 for adults. And Cake opens the season at 8 o'clock Thursday at the Arkansas Music Pavilion.
Oh, my gosh. The amp's already open?
This will be the first one. Yeah.
Wow.
It's spring.
Wow.
It is. Yay, spring.
I've lost track of time.
Tickets start at $25. And free or almost free fun. The Spring Gem and Mineral Show, sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Gem and Mineral Society, is Saturday and Sunday at the Siloam Springs Community Center. It wasn't free when we went last year.
Because it's free to look.
Spent a lot of money.
It's free to look.
Admission is $2 to $3, actually.
Oh. It's not free to look.
It's inexpensive to look. How much you spend right. is not my fault. It's between the two of you, whoever you are.
Right.
Earth Day at Hobbs State Park is Saturday. 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, including stories with Mother Nature, live critters. And at 2 o'clock, botanical author Stephen Foster is speaking on Ozark herbs and medicinal plants.
Not many people on this planet know more about herbs than Stephen
Foster.
And
he is fascinating. And that is free.
Huh.
Pettigrew Day is Saturday.
Where?
In Pettigrew.
There you go.
If you don't know where Pettigrew is, then you have not read much of what I've written over the last 20 years. This is a reunion for residents and friends of the community, which is on Arkansas 16 in Madison County, was once the terminus of a railroad and a lumber town, and really fascinating. Kevin Hatfield, who is the mayor of Huntsville, will speak at 6:30. There's a potluck dinner at 5:30, and it's all free except the potluck, which is $5.
Not bad.
Earth Day is being celebrated Sunday at World Peace Wetland Prairie in Fayetteville from 1 to 5 o'clock. Acoustic Song Circle, children's activities. You can find out more at worldpeacewetlandprairie.com. And the Sunday night stand-up comedy series continues at 7:30 Sunday at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville. It's $7.
Okay. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
In about 5 minutes on Ozarks at Large, the art and science of gymnastics on a moving horse. Friendship Vaulters are in Fayetteville this week as part of the annual Horse Festival at the University of Arkansas. Antoinette's conversation with some of those young athletes involved in the sport just ahead.
Tomorrow night, the Symphony in Northwest Arkansas, or SONA, closes out its first full season. The concert will include music by Mendelssohn and Beethoven. Katie Henriksen, the host of Notes on KUAF, has this preview.
The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas closes its inaugural season tomorrow night at the Walton Arts Center in presenting Beethoven's Ninth Symphony alongside Mahler's Adagietto from his Fifth Symphony. The Adagietto has a long and storied history. It was chosen by Leonard Bernstein to conduct it for Senator Robert Kennedy's funeral at St. Patrick's Cathedral. It also played a prominent role in Visconti's 1970 film Death in Venice. Mahler composed the work as a love letter to his new love and future wife, Alma Schindler. And as SONA music director Paul Haas explains, it has become a standalone work for many reasons.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's the easy answer is it's just such a phenomenal 10 minutes of music. I mean, you can't even believe it. I bet you everyone listening to me talk right now has heard this piece before. They may not know that it's Mahler Adagietto, but they've heard it before. It's kind of like another famous adagio, the Barber Adagio for strings. I mean, everybody knows these pieces. They may not know who the composer was, when it was written, or what it's called, but it's just part of the. Besides the fact that it's a great piece, it's just different from the rest of the symphony, so it's almost made to be extracted. I'm not sure Mahler would say that. It's for strings and harp, whereas the rest of the symphony is for strings, harp, a huge woodwind section, and a huge brass section, and a bunch of percussion. So it basically takes this amazing color, you know, just a part of the orchestra, and dwells on it for a period of time. So it's in that it's different from the rest of the piece, I suppose it makes sense to take it out of context.
SONA will be performing the Adagietto from Mahler as well as Beethoven's Ninth Symphony tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. in the Walton Arts Center. Tickets are still available by calling the box office at 443-5600 or by visiting the website at waltonartscenter.org. Now, this is the conclusion to their inaugural season, so that means they are looking for players for the next season.
It's always good policy for an orchestra to hold auditions, just hold open auditions, both for sub positions and for any chairs that are open. And so we've decided to hold our auditions in May so that we have enough lead time so we can hear the best people as well as have enough lead time to be able to work with them and get it in their calendars for the 2012-13 season. So it's a really exciting time for us. We're just coming out of a first, just wildly successful season, and it's exceeded everyone's expectations. We're having a lot of fun. We're ready to run forward, of course, responsibly, but very dynamically. And to do that, we're going to need to make sure that we have tabs on who the best players are in the area, and make sure that we have the best people on stage playing the music. We have a phenomenal group right now, but we're always looking ahead.
About the auditions being held for Sona Thursday, May 10th through Saturday, May 12th at the Nadine Baum Studios here in Fayetteville, go to sonamusic.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
Katie Henriksen is the host of Note with Katie Henriksen every Monday through Friday morning from 11 until noon on KUAF. And one more note about Sona's Saturday night concert. Beginning at 6:45, I'll host a creative conversation with conductor Paul Haas and others before the concert. That's inside Star Theater at Walton Arts Center.
The 13th annual University of Arkansas Horse Festival is scheduled for today and tomorrow at the Pauline Whitaker Animal Science Arena in Fayetteville. This year's fundraiser will feature the American Vaulting Association Friendship Team Vaulters, who will host a clinic tonight and two exhibitions tomorrow afternoon. Earlier this week, I spoke with 15-year-old Caroline Schubert, 13-year-old Malou Foley, and her 16-year-old sister Francesca. The vaulters were joined inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio by their coach, Greta Shryock, who explained the history of their group.
The American Vaulting Association is the national organization for vaulting, and the friendship team was put together in 1996 as kind of a traveling performance team to promote the sport. It was originally put together for the 96 Olympics, and it was one of those things where they couldn't pick like just a couple people to actually perform at the Olympics. So they opened it up nationally, had people apply for it. It's the top level competitors out of all of United States. And then there was groups that were selected, you know, to perform in different areas, different groups. And that was kind of how it all started. And so the first friendship team demo was in 95. At, I believe, Rolex International in the Kentucky Horse Park, and then led up to the Olympics, and then from there it's been performing all over the United States from there. And the whole purpose is to promote the sport of vaulting and educate and, you know, put ourselves out there to spread the word of what vaulting is. And
you say vaulting, people. And I think a lot of people probably think of just gymnastics and the, you know, vaulting there. So yeah. This is on actual horses.
Yes.
Explain this to me, because this seems like a very dangerous thing to do.
Well, yeah, it's basically gymnastics and dance on horses. So we do handstands and cartwheels and somersaults and pretty much anything that we can think of and anything that we want to on top of the horses. And they're either walking, trotting, or cantering. So, yeah.
And it's really safe because we use a big pad of fur to protect the horse's back. And then we use a big kind of, it's kind of like a saddle, but it only has two big handles for the vaulter to hold. So it's really safe.
Yeah, vaulting statistically is the lowest injury equestrian sport.
Really?
And it also has a lower injury rate than tennis, and it's safer than playing on playground equipment.
Really?
Yes.
That's all very impressive.
Those are very good statistics.
And just to clarify, you do all of these, anything you can think of on the back of the horse while it's moving?
Yes.
Okay.
The horse works in a circle, so it's actually controlled by a lunger. Mm-hmm. So it moves in a consistent circle on a consistent speed. So the person on the horse isn't necessarily controlling the horse whatsoever. So it's not like trick riding where the horse is just running around and you're hanging off the side of it. So it's a lot more controlled than it sounds, which makes it a lot safer than a lot of the other sports because you can just concentrate on what you're doing and you don't have to worry about what the horse is doing underneath you.
So do you guys have a gymnastics background and then one day decided to do that on the back of a horse? Or how does this happen? How does this happen for you guys?
I first found out about vaulting. And so when I first started vaulting, I took gymnastics classes and horseback riding classes as well just to make it easier for me for vaulting. A lot of people do start out in either gymnastics or horseback riding, and then they hear about vaulting through demonstrations like the Friendship Vaulting Team. And gymnastics backgrounds and dance backgrounds can really help, but it's not really necessary.
Did you two start in gymnastics, or how did you guys get started?
Me and my sister started in dance, and then we have always known our coach, Greta, and she just asked us to try her team, and we fell in love with it, and we've been doing it ever since.
And Greta, how did you get involved 20 years ago?
I saw a demonstration. It was a local horse fair that was taking part at our fairgrounds. I was 9 years old. I had been riding horses my entire life, and started gymnastics and dance at, like, the age of 3 or 4. So I had no idea what I was watching, and me and my mom almost got up to leave. And I walked out of the arena, and I saw some kids doing handstands. I was going, whoa, that's interesting. We better go back in and watch. And that was the first time I had ever heard of, seen, or knew anything like that even existed. So I contacted the team and started competing with them pretty immediate. And it was one of those sports that I was just hooked. So I've been doing it ever since.
So how do you learn to do these tricks on the horses? Do you practice just on the horses, or do you practice on the ground first and then hop on? Or
well, first we try things on the ground and see how they're going to work. And then we move it up to the barrel, which is basically like a fake horse that we try things on. And it has handles and everything. And it's shorter than the horse, but other than that, it's the same size. And so, yeah, we can figure out our handholds and everything else on the barrel. And then we'll move it up to the horse at walk. And then we'll move it up to canter if it feels safe.
And we've talked a lot about you guys preparing to be on the horse, but how much preparation do you have to do with the horse itself being used to people kind of on top of it doing different moves? I mean, you're not just sitting there riding it. You're, you know, flipping and doing handstands and things.
Years and years. I would say a vaulting horse is never fully trained. It can always have better endurance, be stronger, have a more consistent gait. I'd say for a high-level horse, you're looking at least 3 years. It's a very demanding sport for the horses because they have to work on a circle. So on a circle, consistent speed. You don't have a rider controlling you, so they have to learn all the verbal cues. And they can't react to anything outside of the arena or anything on top of their back. So it's a lot of training.
Do you prefer younger horses or older horses, or does it matter?
The legal age limit for a horse is 6 years old.
Okay.
So that's the youngest you can compete on them. And then from there, it just really depends on the breed and the temperament of the horse, on how long it takes for their brain to develop more than anything.
Right. So for the Friendship Vaulting Team, is there an age limit, and how does one become a part of it?
There is no age limit. What happens is the top level vaulters in the U.S. will get a letter in the mail asking them if they would like to apply for the friendship team. And then you kind of, you send in your application, and then for each demonstration, each individual vaulters are picked to go. So not everybody goes to every demonstration.
Okay. And you guys are going to be doing a clinic on the 13th. How do you run a clinic? I mean, it's one thing to get out there and sort of show off, but it's another to try and teach someone how to do things.
For a clinic with this type of group that doesn't really have that much exposure to vaulting, we kind of just run through the basics of how to find a vaulting horse, what kind of breeds you look for, the size, the temperament, the equipment that we use, how to start young vaulters or beginning vaulters, you know, the basic moves, how to do them safely. Just kind of start from the very beginning. If you were going to start a team, the tools that you would need to actually build a team from the ground up. So the safety of the horses, the equipment, the basic knowledge, and going up kind of to the higher level of the performance stuff so people can see from the beginning steps up to what a final product looks like.
And you'll be doing a couple of shows on Saturday. So what are your shows like?
Basically, we're just going to be doing some individual moves to showcase our strengths and everything. And then we're also going to do doubles and team freestyle. So, like, multiple people on the horse and lifting people up. And, yeah, it should be fun.
And there might be a little comedy act thrown in there somewhere as
always
well.
Always good. It's always good. So, multiple people on a horse. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was already impressed with just one. Now you've added two and three. Fantastic. How many of you guys will be performing?
We will all be performing.
So all three of you.
Yeah. And there's more of us that aren't here yet. So there's nine of us total.
Total, okay.
Yeah, so nine total that will be within this group, and we have two horses.
You guys have been doing this for a little bit, and you clearly enjoy what you're doing, and you're doing it at a high level. I mean, why do you enjoy it, or why would you maybe encourage other people to get in, if they're interested maybe in the sport, to get into it?
Well, I really enjoy it just because of the performing part of it. I like to perform for people, and I like the energy you get from the audience. And that's a good part about vaulting, because when you do performances, people are always impressed, and it's always a great feeling with the horse and with the vaulter. But for people to get interested in it, it's really easy to fall in love with the sport, because there's so many things that go into it, like gymnastics and dance and then the horse part of it. So pretty much it can apply to anybody.
The Friendship Team Vaulters will host a clinic at 7 o'clock tonight, and they will perform at noon and 3:30 p.m. tomorrow. Admission to the clinic is $5 for adults and free for children 8 and younger. Tickets to either of Saturday's performances are $10 for adults or $5 for children 8 and younger. Proceeds will benefit the D.E. King Equine Program at the U of A. More information is available at horsefestival.org.
And this weekend, it's not just the Horse Festival in Fayetteville that's taking place. You have a chance to celebrate reading, food, gardening, bookbinding, softball, and music. The Fayetteville Public Library will invite children to read with the Razorbacks tomorrow morning at 10:30 at the Children's Library. For more information, you can go to faylib.org. The 5th Annual International Festival is taking place tomorrow at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith on the campus green. That's from 11 until 1 and is free. More than 30 countries will be represented with clothing, artifacts, photos, and additional items. If you'd like to have more information about creating that successful Ozark Spring Garden, that information will be available tomorrow at the West Fork Public Library. The owner of Beyond Organics will talk about early season starters. That event is free and begins tomorrow morning at 11 at the library in West Fork. You can learn to bind your book at home tomorrow during the Elkins Writers Group. That's beginning at 2 at the Elkins Public Library. The Girls Open Softball Tournament is tomorrow and Sunday at Memorial Park in Bentonville. The event's still in need of volunteers. For more information, you can send an email to 9foundation@sbcglobal.net. The McDonald Music Series at First Presbyterian Church will end its 2011-2012 season with the Remy Lee Cooley Trio in concert Sunday afternoon at 3. That's at First Presbyterian Church in Fort Smith. They will play classical trios by Brahms, Mozart, and others. And finally, this reminder, the submission deadline for inclusion in the Spring 2012 Northwest Arkansas Local Food Guide is Sunday. You can go online to the nwalocalfoodguide.org for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Time now for a trivia question. We have a couple more tickets to give away to Sona's concert on Saturday.
Tomorrow night, yes. And we're going to ask a question about someone who was born on this date in 1866. Robert Leroy Parker. He became known as an American outlaw, not by that name. Mm-hmm. And he was also often remembered for working as an outlaw with his partner named Harry Alonzo Longbaugh. Mm-hmm. We want to know, who are these American outlaws, Robert Leroy Parker and Harry Alonzo Longbaugh? What are they more famously known as? Here's a hint. They died in Bolivia.
Okay. If you know the answer, give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 13th of April, 2012. The birthday of Thomas Jefferson, born Albemarle County, Virginia, 1743, primary author of the Declaration of Independence, who also wrote books on farming and gardening, and whose personal library was the largest private collection in this country, 6,487 volumes. He sold it to Congress after the British burned down the Library of Congress. It's the birthday of Samuel Beckett, born in Fox Rock, a suburb of Dublin, 1906. Studied French literature in college, then went to Paris, where he met James Joyce, who by that time was almost blind and working on Finnegan's Wake. Beckett became his assistant. He read books to Joyce. He took dictation. He walked with him around Paris. He idolized Joyce so much that he began to smoke like Joyce and walk like Joyce. And he tried to write in Joyce's meandering style, but Beckett said, "I realized that my own way was in taking away, in subtracting, rather than in adding." 1952, Samuel Beckett wrote his play Waiting for Godot with its repeated motif, "I can't go on, I will go on," in which Estragon says, "I can't go on like this," and Vladimir says, "That's what you think." Samuel Beckett, who wrote, "My mistakes are my life. Where I am, I don't know. I'll never know. In the silence you don't know, you must go on. Try again, fail better." He wrote, "We are all born mad. Some remain so. Dance first, think later. It's the natural order." And Samuel Beckett said, "Nothing is funnier than unhappiness." And it's the birthday of Eudora Welty, born Jackson, Mississippi, 1909, who wrote several novels, including The Optimist's Daughter, but she's best known for her short stories, which she wrote and rewrote, cutting them apart at her dining room table. You can tour her house and garden in Jackson for $5, the house at 1119 Pinehurst Street. She moved into the house in 1925 with her parents when she was 16, and she lived there until she died in 2001. The garden has been restored, too. It was planted by her mother, Chestina, so that there would be something in bloom all year round. Larkspur, hollyhocks, and snapdragons in the spring, phlox, zinnias, and blue salvia in the summer, asters, chrysanthemums, and spider lilies in the fall, and camellias and pansies in the winter, and climbing roses on trellises. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, entitled Storage. That year we left the house we couldn't afford and put our belongings in storage. We were free now to travel or live in tiny spaces. We kept our chairs and tables in a cement cell, our bookshelves, our daughter's old toys, clothes we wouldn't wear or discard. There were books we liked but did not need, and mattresses and pots and pans. Sometimes we went to visit our things, sat in our rocking chairs, searched for a jacket, listened to an old radio. It was like visiting someone I loved in a hospital, the way, removed from the world, a person or object becomes thin, diminished. The furniture on which we lived our young life had no job but to wait for us. It remembered our dinners, the light through our windows, the way the baby once played on the floor. Storage by Faith Sheeran from Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Heather McPherson, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it is time to provide an answer to today's trivia question.
Which was?
I asked because Robert Leroy Parker was born on this date in 1866. He became known as an American outlaw along with his partner Harry Alonzo Longbaugh. And I wanted to know, what do we most often call Robert Leroy Parker and Harry Alonzo Longbaugh?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
That is correct. All correct answers go into the Ceramic Cow. We'll pull two more folks out, and they will receive tickets to tomorrow night's Sona concert. Your tickets will be at will call. Don't have to come here to pick them up. They won't come in the mail. Just go to Walton Arts Center tomorrow night.
Yep.
KUAF is supported by Keels Creek Winery, featuring a variety of wines using locally grown grapes and local art-themed labels. The winery is located in Eureka Springs and offers a tasting room and art gallery. More information is available on the web at keelscreek.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Tahlequah.
Ithi Agnihotri Madolkar will join me Sunday morning at 9 for the weekend edition of Ozarks Large. Then you're flying solo on Monday.
I will be back Monday by myself.
Let's see. Butch Cassidy, as I mentioned, was born on this date in 1866.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was born on this date?
Thomas Jefferson.
Eudora Welty.
Yep.
Author of Wise Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel Beckett, the playwright and author. Anybody else born on this date?
Me.
Yes. Happy birthday, Antoinette.
Thank you.
And let's see. Tomorrow night,
mm-hmm.
I'll be moderating a creative conversation at Walton Arts Center before the final Sona concert of the year. It takes place at 6:45 mm-hmm. inside Star Theater at Walton Arts Center.
So the concert's at 7:30.
That's correct. I talked to Paul Haas and some other people involved with this big concert. Musicians, singers on stage.
Any other plans for the weekend?
I don't think so.
Really?
Well, I'm sure there are.
Right.
But nothing that yes, would be the answer. Just nothing that's work-related or anything like that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Kansas City Royals opened their home season this weekend. That's exciting. The Naturals opened their home season last night.
They did.
Lost to Corpus Christi. They play again on the homestand this week. So
better luck tonight.
Maybe I'll catch a Naturals game.
You should.
I should, yes. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great weekend.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did need some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing I know, the blues they send to me keep
falling on my head. But that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me.